from the intersection of technology and public accounting.
It's technology advice and insight you can trust.
This is Tech2Go.
Tech2Go is the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly podcast program, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Greg LaFollette and regular columnist Brent Goodfellow, Dave McClure, and Randy Johnston. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Good morning. This is Greg LaFollette, Tech2Go, live from the ASCPA Tech Conference, ASCPA Tech Plus 2007 in Las Vegas for the first time. We've got the group all here together in person, and I can not only welcome my friend Randy Johnston, I can reach out and slap him on the shoulder and say good morning. Randy, I understand it was a little hard to get up real early this morning.
Actually, it was no challenge at all, but everybody should be able to operate on less than 3 hours of sleep.
Wonderful. Well, welcome and thanks for being here. It was a little bit of a challenge to get schedules arranged, but I did get my friend Brent Goodfellow here, and he's here ready to roll. How's it going this morning?
It's going well. Came in yesterday afternoon and just happy to be here.
Okay,
great. The Mirage. We didn't say that.
Super. We're at the Mirage. Our regular panelist, Dave McClure, is not attending Tech Plus, and so we've traded up this time.
There you go.
To my friend Jim Burke. Jim serves with me on the CATP Credential Committee, is the immediate past president, he says with a big smile.
Absolutely.
The immediate past president of the New Jersey Society, very active and a great technologist. Jim, thanks for being here and welcome.
No problem, Greg. Thanks. Thanks for inviting me. I'm really,
absolutely,
really happy to be part of your Tech2Go session today.
We've got a real full session here today. Lots of different things going on, and I want to start by just some first impressions from tech. The number of attendees is up very significantly, about 20-25% from last year. So it's a good crowd here. That's a good thing. Our opening session, was that only yesterday morning? It seems like about a week ago. Our opening session done by the master, Randy Johnston. Randy, I told you yesterday that it was the best presentation you've ever done. I consider myself a geek, and I thought the top of my head was going to blow off.
marvelous
stuff. What did you hear from people? What did they like?
Thank you for that. And they actually were quite interested in the hardware parts, because the purchasing that's going to have to happen on laptops and desktops this year is so radically different. And I don't think that they perceived that the changes were that big a deal. They were just going to go out on their normal purchase cycles, and all of a sudden they're like, whoa, wait a minute, let's think this one through. I think that they were also pleasantly surprised with some of the other developments in technology, and they also came up asking about, well, this Office 2007 thing, how do we do that? So we've talked about the Ribbon X Customizer product in the past in one of our sessions. That came up over and over again yesterday, and I think you're correct. Before we started recording, the virtualization questions seem to come in left and right, and I think there's a fair bit of confusion that hopefully we'll clear up in today's session.
Sure, we're going to talk specifically about virtualization and do a lot of that.
I was just going to say, for some of us, and myself included, but some of our audience may not have been in your session, I wonder if it would be useful if you took maybe one or two, three high points and just mentioned what you're talking about here.
Yeah,
so it's a frame
idea.
Of reference.
Good
yeah,
idea.
No, I appreciate that. And in fact, it was actually a pretty interesting challenge, because for those of you who have seen me give the presentation around the country, it's typically about 90 minutes. So one of the things we had to do yesterday was cut the content to 60 minutes. Maybe that means I should do it in 60 minutes more of the time. I don't know.
Just talk faster.
It was hard to keep up. I can't listen that fast.
Yeah, sometimes I have trouble thinking that fast, that's for sure. But specifically filtered out what I would consider some extra things, but some of the key things that I think are important technologies for 2007, I named those to start us off with. And that included things like the Office 2007 Vista, virtualization, what was going on there. A rather odd claim that the more I say it, the more I'm getting comfortable with it, that I think the days of rack-mounted servers are just about to come to a close. And I've been a huge proponent of rack-mount servers for a long time, but it seems to me that the time frame for doing blade servers, the price performance and all those things are coming into line. And by the time you put that together with another key technology, which is the USB sticks, and how we can put applications on those and so forth, that really strikes home. So beyond those things, we actually did kind of waltz our way through the requirements for laptops, the requirements for desktops, the changes in the printers, considerations on scanners, the hardware side of the world, if you will, and then on into some of the changes in the software pieces and how that's continuing to evolve there.
Right. Did you talk at all about the SAN devices and the iSCSI standards, so diskless blades, I guess, if for lack of a better word?
No. As a matter of fact, when I looked at what I had to leave in and take out, the discussions around the higher-end SANs actually disappeared. I took out one of my favorite things, which was really the new gaming console environment, because I've got all of the Wii and the Xbox and the PlayStation 3 all set up with the HD and all that. But, you know, they're starting to have medical reports of injuries from using the Wii. So that's pretty, just like we talk about, you know, BlackBerry thumb, carpal thumb syndrome, we're actually starting to have shoulder, wrist, and elbow problems from using the Wiimotes.
Wiiitis.
Wiiitis.
Let's back up just a little bit. I've got a couple of things, and I want to get some impressions from Jim and Brent. You came in just yesterday, so you kind of walked into the middle of a storm.
I did.
But before we go there, I've got some really, really great news to share. As of yesterday, Tech2Go has a sponsor, so we can pay the bandwidth bill for the year. And I want to thank ADP for sponsoring us. You know, nice guys over there, and I've worked with them before in other lives, and back when I practiced public accounting, they called on us. We had clients that used them and things, and good stuff. Many practicing accountants look to them. They seem to partner reasonably well with accounting firms, and I'm thrilled to have them. I like those guys, and yeah, they don't happen to be at this show, but you see them at a lot of shows out in the country, and I just wanted to thank them.
They have a good presence in the CPA community, and it's really nice to have a good sponsor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, good
thank
presence
you
up in the Northeast, and so same here. Really, thanks for sponsoring.
Yep, they're just right down the road from you. Their home office is in Parsippany, right?
Yep. Yes, it is.
Yep, I've been there a couple of times. Just a car service right away from the Newark Airport. I have no idea what direction it is, but I know it's not far because it doesn't take very long.
Well, I've been lost in New Jersey more than once on those roads, but I've been to that same office in New Jersey for ADP. And, of course, a lot of the payroll and HR services that they're doing, clearly they're one of the top providers in the country. And I think they're going to maintain that position. And they've actually got some innovative stuff that they're doing right now. Yes. So for a big company to remain innovative is really key.
It's not safe to get lost in New Jersey, I understand.
It's safe.
Well, you know, Tony survived, so I think it's going to be all right.
You're on the same road that they show at the opening of the Sopranos, and then the governor passes you at about 95 miles an hour. But we don't want to go too far there. Anyway, I'm thrilled to have ADP. And it's a great sponsor, and we know for sure that the check will clear, so we can keep doing Tech2Go. Randy and I had a couple of people come up to us at the Tech Plus here in the last couple of days and say, "Gee, we really like your podcast, and keep doing it." And we went, "Wow, that's really interesting. It was really fun. I, you know, feel a little bit like a rock star, you know." And so it was fun. So we invited some people in, and they're sitting here in the room with us. This is the first time we've ever been able to be all together. We usually do this, by telephone, and it's I don't know whether this is a good idea or a bad idea to be able to see you guys when we're doing
Yeah, I was going to say, watching the body language, I'm not sure I can cope with this.
Exactly.
It's a very different experience.
Too much.
It's great, though, we can raise our hands instead of interrupting each other.
Yeah, right. That's part of the beauty of what we're doing. Jim, what about you? You've been a busy guy, done a bunch of sessions and things. Tell me what you think.
I've actually been having a great time, and Randy's session was absolutely fabulous. To me, that's been my highlight so far. I ended up getting in a little bit late because I've been spending a lot of time at our AICPA booth. We've been out there trying to recruit in new CITPs and new IT section members, and it's been going very, very, very well. There's been so much activity happening at our booth. Everyone is interested in the IT member section. We're getting a lot of interest in the CITP designation. And as you know, we have some state reach out awards coming up a little bit later on today about lunchtime. So really looking forward to that. I'm just so happy that there's been so much interest in our designation. And everyone is coming up to me and asking us about it. So I'm real happy for the AICPA's continued support of our credentialing and expansion of that credentialing going forward. So.
And if I could jump in on this,
sure,
Randy here, but you know, for people who listen to the podcast, it's pretty clear you're probably the right class of CPA that should be a member of the CITP section.
Right.
Clearly, the attendees here at Tech, a very high percentage of these should be attendees as well. So I figure between the listener base and the attendees here, you know, there's potential and probability that CITP should number 3,000 plus.
Yeah,
and that's
I agree.
A pretty lofty sounding goal,
right,
but it's very doable.
If you are a CPA and you're geeky enough to have found this podcast, you should be a CITP.
Exactly, right now.
Exactly.
Look, exactly. If you are listening right now and you are a CPA, you are involved in technology, there's no reason why you should not be and look into the CITP credential. It's an absolutely great credential, and it creates a whole sense of community around CPAs that have expertise in technology.
Well, now, in interest of full disclosure, we do have to back up and say that that I chair the CITP Credential Committee.
True.
And the National Accreditation Commission will have my head on a plate if we don't continue to grow, and we're growing beautifully, and that's great, and a lot of that is because I've got a great committee member in Jim Burke, so we do have a little bit of a vested interest, but Brent, you're a CITP, and you're not on the committee, and there's several people in the room who are also CITPs, so it's not just us.
Right, so if you want an opposing view, I guess you can talk to me.
Great, well, you know, that's obviously Tech is going well, and we're excited there. And we talked a little bit about the CITP credential and how that seems to be going. Jim, I want to, you know, this won't go out until after the state awards. So talk about those state awards and what happened. There are a lot of people that don't know what that state challenge was. Kind of explain that.
Sure, I know we're going to announce it today at lunch, so this is sort of, you know, like a little heads up prior to that, but it's really going to happen subsequent to it anyway.
Right.
Sort of weird. We actually, we had three initiatives this year in our CITP Credential Committee, and one of those initiatives was a state reach out. At the time, I was president of the Jersey Society of CPAs, and I felt we had a huge untapped market out there to state societies. With the state societies having a lot of a number of IT conferences, conventions, IT groups, resource leaders with a focus on technology, we felt we're missing the boat here on a lot of CPAs. Let's try to bridge the gap. Let's have the AICPA, through our credential committee, reach out to the state societies. So what we decided to do is start small. We started with we called it the Big 14. It turned into 15. So we reached out to 15 state societies, the 15 largest state societies in the U.S., and explained our what we wanted to do. And what we wanted to do is try to utilize the states to reach out to the CPAs that had an expertise in technology within those states. So some states don't have IT committees or IT resource groups, so we worked through the state society leadership for that. And others, we work directly with the volunteer membership. So we basically got on board 11 states through the state societies, and they were Georgia, Pennsylvania, Maryland, California, Texas, Florida, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, New Jersey, and Massachusetts. Each of those 11 states participated in our state CITP challenge. It went absolutely fabulous. It started It started actually around December, because this idea came about as a result of our fall CITP meeting in where were we? We were in New York. That's right. We've had so many and so many conference calls. We were in New York, and we decided to move forward with the challenge. So it basically, over a 6-month period, what we ended up doing, we ended up adding 101 new CITPs as a result of reaching out through these 11 states. And what we decided to do is come up with an award for the state that increased the number of CITPs based upon a net increase, and that state actually is the state of California. California will win today in a few hours. We're going to present them with an award, and they also won passes to Tech Plus this year. They actually increased the number of CITPs within the state of California by 21. We also had another award for the net percentage increase, the largest percentage increase, and that award is going to the state of Indiana. We have Darren Root accepting for Indiana, and we had Bob Gaby accepting. We will have Bob Gaby accepting for the state of California.
And so, these guys get, not only the states get, number one, some passes to Tech next year, which is a nice thing, because
sure,
they can hand those out to some of their technology leaders. And they get a very nice crystal trophy for their headquarters, and they get bragging rights for a year.
That's right.
And which is probably the most important thing. So, I mean, and this year now we're expanding.
Yes.
And you'll announce soon,
right,
that now the challenge for 2008 opens in about 2 hours.
Yep.
So by the time you're listening to this, it's already open.
It's on the street.
So if you're in one of those states and you are or aren't a CITP, if you're a technology guy, check with your state society and say, hey, what are we doing to get involved here? These states are now working with each other. They've got a series of conference calls going. There's all sorts of exciting things going on as a result of this project. And plus 100 new members, which is very nice, but just a great new program, and it's going to be fun to watch you award those today.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, we viewed it as the numbers came in way higher than we had originally anticipated, but we viewed it as a foundation, building a foundation with the state societies, creating a sense of community and a collaborative effort with each of these state societies. So to us, it's just the building of something that's going to be really great. And it goes way beyond credentialing. It really has to do bridging the gap between state societies and the AICPA working together.
Right. So at lunch, in a couple of hours, mm-hmm, at our lunch and general session, we're going to make those awards and then challenge the rest of the states. We're going to open it to all 50 states,
yep,
and limit it to the first 25 states that sign up.
That's right.
So chop, chop.
Right, but we're going to allow the 11 who participated in this year's challenge to the first opportunity to re-up for next year. So hopefully they all re-up, which I assume they'll re-up, and it'll open the opportunity for 14 new states. So the first 14 new states. So, Greg, with any luck, by the time you publish this on Tech2Go, we'll already have those 14 slots filled. How about that?
Exactly. That would be fun.
All right.
Second thing we're doing at lunch today is announcing to the profession the 2007 Innovation Award winners from the CPA Technology Advisor. All of you were on the panel. All of you suffered through those 50 or 60 different products and this great big old PDF to try and figure out who to vote for. There were about 40 of us voting, so a very wide dispersion of opinions and stuff. And five products rise to the top, and I want to we actually announced these and awarded them to the vendor community last week at the California show in Los Angeles. So the press releases have gone out, and the vendor community knows it. We'll present these today. Our tradition is we present them at Tech, kind of to the profession. And so at a general session today, we've got those five winners. We have execs from each of those companies here to accept their award. And I kind of want to get you guys' impression as voters and things. The first one that, and remember, these are not in order. They're just five awards. So the first one is the Microsoft Office Accounting Express. And I mean, great product. Won an award last year for the Microsoft Office Accounting. And then it came back and impressed the judges, I guess because they made it free and downloadable.
Do
it's impressed, what, about 1.6 million 1,600,000 people now. It's impressed them enough to download it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many people are using it. Did that rise to the top of your lists? I don't want to ask you how you voted necessarily, but thoughts or impressions on that product?
Well, you know, the changes in what used to be called Small Business Accounting 2006 clearly was a Gen 1 Microsoft product, and we all will accept probably that common knowledge that you need about version 3 and most Microsoft products for them to get pretty strong. Well, there were pretty significant changes in 2006 to 2007. It was clear that the developers had listened and done a lot of things to the product to make it radically better. In my own teaching team of K2, I'm just picturing Mac McClelland, who's actually ranting and raving about the capabilities of Office Accounting, and he knows, you know, multiple products pretty well, including QuickBooks, which he teaches, and Peachtree, which he teaches, and so forth. But I think what's happening with Mac is he sees that future vision of what the product can be and is becoming. So now you put this in the formula of free, and you put it in the formula of included in 3 of the Microsoft Office suites. That means a lot of people are going to get this. So, you know, as we go back to the early 90s when QuickBooks was starting, a lot of that heritage is the same on that front. Mm-hmm. So I think the attractiveness of the product, the usability being like Microsoft Outlook, the integration across into Exchange and so forth, for a very simplistic business, I can see that they're going to get some market share. Whether people really think about their choice or not, or they just say, well, you know, it's free, I'll try this, and then they wind up staying there.
I think that's going to be huge. It's in the box. It looks like Office. Brent, I mean, you're a Microsoft, I'll call you a Microsoft fanboy. it is clearly a technologically superior product. It looks, just the look and feel, the way it operates and stuff, from a Microsoft view. Not that you're a Microsoft employee or not, but you're so familiar with all of that. What do you think?
I think Microsoft has a huge club here because they own the code for the operating system. They own the code for the Office suite. And so if anything's going to work well with those products, it's going to be their own accounting product. Now, you could say it's their own, but really it's not their own because they tried this whole accounting thing years ago and didn't work too well. And then they went out to Fargo, mm-hmm. North Dakota, and bought a little company called Great Plains. And then they bought Navision, and they've taken subsets of that code, and they've developed this free product. And free is a great price, and it's how Quicken got started all those years ago. And clearly they're taking on Intuit with this product.
Well, you know, Intuit,
I think they have a great chance.
Intuit also ended up with an innovation award for the Intuit Lacerte product with its smart map function. And they won the award for the smart map function. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to see that. Anybody got any comments? I mean, I saw it, and I was under NDA when I saw it, and I was so disappointed because I couldn't talk about it. And I know, Randy, you were in the same place. And the day the NDA came off, I happened to be with Randy, and I said, boy, did you see this new thing? He says, yeah, I wanted to tell you about it. And we both knew about it, couldn't talk about it.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because you really do have to treat those NDAs with 100% confidence. And that's an advantage that I really do enjoy because broadening the confidence of so many vendors to see what they're trying to do. But that particular product shows insight and design innovation, and the Lacerte team has done a nice job with the tax product for a long, long time, adding that capability along with some of the other things that they've got, the DMS and whatnot. They're really thinking about making things easier for the practitioner. And in fact, I think a key competitive advantage Lacerte has now, and it's demonstrated through that product in part two, is how can we make tax prep go easier, faster? So to me, that's what that's about in that product line. So they deserve at least the kudos for having the vision of the style in which they're doing it, too, because other people will duplicate or try to do what they've done. And to me, that's really the sign of a truly great product. Other people see it and imitate it.
Right, which has happened often. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that, some of the innovation awards. But before we do that, give me a 30-second visual. If you haven't seen SmartMap, tell them what it is, Randy. Give me a quick visual.
Boy, this is hard. In the context of the podcast, I'm actually thinking about several things we're doing today. If I could just draw you a picture.
Exactly.
If I could show you a screen, you could see it easier. I think the quickest, easiest thing to do is just assume that all of the 1040 work paper documentation is pre-sorted for you, that you can basically drag and drop the numbers into the appropriate position on the tax return, and poof.
Exactly.
And you take a
QuickBooks trial balance, and it's on one side of your work paper, of your screen, and on the other side of the screen is the Lacerte product, and you drag a title that says Cash in Bank, and as soon as you touch it, page 4 of the 1120 pops up, and you drag Cash in Bank over and drop it on that box, and it changes to $12,417. So you got numbers and words, and it automatically does it. It's quick drag and drop, and once it's done forever. Right. And it's amazing how fast it is. I still run into accountants who tell me, "Yeah, we don't use that because it's faster to just key in a trial balance." And it's obviously insane, but
Greg, it's Intuit understanding what we do and what takes a lot of time in our practices. For years we've been dealing with this issue, getting trial balance information, and there's always been exports, things like that. But they've really nailed it with this feature, dragging and dropping, remembering it. It's awesome. So it's really going beyond. It's Intuit understanding what our profession needs by really understanding what our practices do.
That's what I was going to say. Yep. We've had this integration for years, right?
Didn't work very well.
And we've got these tax line codes and, this long list of put this code and it has to match this general ledger number. And the drag and drop, the visual thing just brings it all together.
Really moved it up. Yep. Randy, you mentioned just a minute ago this concept of innovation in what happens when people copy. The next award winner is absolutely classic. Dave Weil runs SurePrep, and they launched a product last year called 1040 Scan. Mm-hmm. Very quickly, scans work papers, creates a PDF, then OCRs, forms recognition, OCRs the numbers, and drops them into your tax product. So it's kind of like a junior accountant in a box. But since the time he launched it, you have a Lacerte product, you have a CCH product coming. You have two CCH products coming, one for ProFX and one for the small firm services. Thompson is releasing a product. So there are five products. Docket is looking at over on the document management side looking at. So one product, and within a year, you have six people coming up. Now, that to me, that's innovation.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Dave, I chatted with Dave actually recently about the next version of the product, and he is here at Tech. But I was amazed at their sophistication on SurePrep of handling business rules. They're crossing into the 500 different rules category, which is pretty amazing. And further, for that product to be able to take handwritten documents, handwritten words and handwritten numbers, and OCR and recognize those and translate those into numbers, and kind of like the Lacerte product, remember what you did this year so there are improvements in next year's processes. That's a big deal. Further, Dave in the last conversation tells me that the firms that they talk to tell them that it's saving about 25% of the time in a tax return. Well, cool. If you have the discipline, which of course you should and do have, I hope, that you're keeping all of that, billing the same, and you can take 25% of the time costs out, how nifty. Plus, it takes away some of that mundane work that many of us would do. The organization of the work papers, the way that all works, and of course, SurePrep's product goes into GoSystemRS, as well as CCH ProSystemFX, as well as the Lacerte product as well. So it's just a pretty nifty thing. And, of course, the key innovation for that product coming in the next year, instead of running it on the big computers in Southern California, will be you can run it on a server in your house if you want to.
That's a big deal.
It's a huge deal.
But that's actually not going to be released in time for next tax season. Yeah. It'll be released somewhere out towards the end. The beauty of having it a central database is it's not really a central database, but every time you run a return, the system gets smarter. So if I run 1,000 returns and you run 1,000 returns, my system is smarter by mine and yours. Mm-hmm. And if I pull that back in, I'm going to give that up. Now, Jim, you've looked at this.
I tell you, this is really taking document management, content management to the next level. You know, for years, those firms that jumped early on into content management have been scanning and built up these huge databases. Now, taking those scanned images and being able to export those and populate tax returns, what a huge time savings. And, you know, SurePrep is way ahead of the competition. I attribute a lot of that to the fact that, you know, they were in the outsourcing arena. They understood, again, another example of a company understanding what it is that takes time with inside a CPA firm. Where are we spending all of our time? Populating tax return with information that we get, especially on the scanned images. I tell you, one of the items that really blew me away about their product was on year-end brokerage statements with cost, with capital gains and loss transactions, man. And when you have long-term, short-term, you can have hundreds of transactions. Well, if that broker is listing out cost-based information, date acquired, date sold, and I saw this firsthand, sucking out all that information, populating the tax returns, that, to me, that's a huge, huge time savings.
Right. He's got a list of 50? 30 or 40 yeah. different
sure.
brokerage firms that, you know, Wells Fargo and Merrill Lynch, and so they go to him and say, you know, I want to see what your what the format is, so they know what the format. As soon as they look at see sure. Merrill Lynch, they automatically go, oh, I know where to find stuff on this statement.
Yeah, and what is that attributable to? You know, Randy mentioned the business rules, expansion of those business rules up to 500 business rules. So looking at forms, looking at those rules, if it meets this, let's do this. So it is just huge. And again, it's learning every day.
Well, and that brokerage statement point that you make is cool because it will take numbers footed or in the text to get the dollars.
That's right.
And it's actually, now how did they figure that out? And I'm like an old programmer looking at this saying, that's pretty darn sophisticated and cool.
Yeah, the real challenge for them is going to be keeping up with the changes. You know, so a brokerage all of a sudden decides to change the format of their statement, it blows their rule out of the water.
It does.
And they're going to have to deal with that because we know that brokerage houses change the format of their statements all the time.
Yeah, I believe, though, with their programming team, though, they can update a form in a matter of about 48 hours. Mm-hmm. So all they have to do is find out that there's an exception. And, of course, the outside sourcing you mentioned, Jim, is actually key to this because, as Greg had also mentioned, you've got this pool of documents, and the pool keeps getting bigger. So a document comes through that gets processed with an exception. All of a sudden it shows up on their accession list, and they have a wonderful console. I don't know if you guys have seen the console that lets their programming development team know, here's some areas of exception, we better go fix this thing. So they actually are alerted pretty quickly that there's been a change in format, and they add another format.
They can adjust appropriately.
Yeah, I know they're really counting. This thing really blown up and doing extremely well for next tax season. I think in talking to Dave, they were talking about the goal is to have about 600 firms up and running on this application for tax season 2008. So, really moving full steam ahead, and I can tell you, you know, the others, as you know, CCH, and they're not too far behind.
Right. Well, and that's why we did the Innovation Awards. Yep. You find this stuff, shine a light on it. We've seen it happen. We saw it happen last year with the products, the old product that used to be called BachDip, which is now the CCH scan product.
Yep.
That was the very first product in this space. It won an innovation award. By the time we had given the award, there were already people copying them. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's great. You know, I introduced Dave yesterday. We did the vendor showcase for Infirm Solutions, and the SurePrep product was one of them, and there was a question at the end, we had time for one last question, and the question was, what about complicated K-1s? And the answer was, we take the front page of the K-1, and we do that, and we do it just like a junior account. We do the front page that we recognize, and we take the rest of it back to you and say, I don't know what to do with this. You know? So it's just like a junior account in a box.
Yeah.
So in the next one, Thompson Tax and Accounting won an award for Practice CS. This is a dashboard product. It's an amazing futuristic product. And Brent, you've got some familiarity with it. Any thoughts on that? Did that get high on your list? Or?
It did, mainly because it's written in .NET.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's a very current programming language. The dashboard is very Outlook-like. You can customize
that. Tell me what that dashboard looks like.
It's a customizable set of portlets, I guess. I've heard Randy refer to it as portlets or snippets of information that can be customized. So each partner can pick up different information. Each staff person can pick up different information from the database.
Right, and they can, they've got what do they call the firm view, the staff view, and the client view.
Client view, right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting stuff. And you know they've got now I'm sure well over 1,000 users out there now, and it's interesting when you look at some of the other people in the practice management world and they tell you what they're building that they're going to release in 2009, and you look at the slideware, mm-hmm. and then you go look at this product, mm-hmm. and you go, gee, that's the product that they say they're working on. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what's going on.
Yeah, this product had a rocky start, but it's clearly, you know, miles ahead of the competition at this point.
Right. So. Right, kind of one of those Microsoft, not a Microsoft product, but a V1 product.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, because when you look at the competitors who are going to have something like this, that's that head start you're talking about. But now, if Thompson will keep pressing ahead and add additional features that I think are useful to firms, and we'll pick on something a little more complex, like firm analytics, where are my clients coming from,
right. And
geo-mapping that. And, you know, there's just many things that as you think about it from a firm management, from a partner in charge, that type of view, what would those type of people want to see in there? That would be a great place to put more information.
I'd like to see more CRM in it, you know, more contact type recording, you know, touch points with our clients.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the weakest things in CPA firm software as far as I'm concerned.
Everywhere in the world. I mean, there is.
It is.
CRM is dismal. Career reducing move, right? Is that the acronym? So the last one, I want to get back to the innovation awards. The last one, an interesting product from BankServe called DepositNow AR, built by a bunch of ex-Wells Fargo people, and it does all of the scanning things under the Check 21. You know, if you've walked into a store and if you see somebody who writes a check, I haven't written a check in years, but if somebody writes a check and they take it and scan it and hand it back to them and nobody knows what to do with it, this technology is the technology that BankServe is using to automatically deposit checks and record it. But what they've done is take that information, look at the check routing, the MICR there, and identify the client and go open Peachtree or open QuickBooks, and I understand they're working in Microsoft Office too, find that customer and do the accounting. If you've got a bunch of checks coming in, I think this is a pretty awesome product. Mm-hmm. I was pretty impressed.
And let's face it, if you can do checks, ACH, all of a sudden you're doing an awful lot of the mundane entry, mm-hmm. and you've got a lot more accuracy going on that front.
Right.
So, you know, as you think about how banking has evolved, at a slight bit of a history lesson here, you think about how banking's evolved in the U.S. versus how banking's evolved in Canada, there's quite a difference between the two systems. And ours is, frankly, a lot more dysfunctional in many, many ways. But this is really smoothing out a lot of these issues for the banking system.
Right, because Check 21 said to all these banks, we don't care if you don't want to play, you will accept
electronic
transactions.
So, you know, you start looking at what these guys have done with that particular product innovation, and you've got the big boys trying to do the same thing. So you've got actually competitive innovation that will occur, and I always love to have multiple competitors. I think you need 3 to 5 in a space for it to really be innovative. So, you know, you look at what's going on with Citibank, and you look at what's going on at Wells Fargo, and you look at what's going on with Bank of America, and you got these little upstarts doing these type of things. It's really good for the industry. And if they've got a good, solid SDK, the interface software, they can extend this rapidly to other platforms, which, much like Avalara, Sales Tax, who's doing that same thing. They wrote one product. They're extending it to a lot of platforms in a hurry. I think these guys have an opportunity to have a really booming, growing business.
Interesting products. Well,
it is.
Those are the five. The information we'll put in the show notes, but you can pop over and read a little bit more about them. We're pretty proud of them. They're pretty interesting. Randy, one of the things that that I heard you talk about yesterday, and this is interesting because we put together this list of things we wanted to talk about two or three weeks ago, and as we talked about this, and we wanted to talk about virtualization. And you talked about virtualization yesterday. We've been talking about it with servers for quite some time, and now we're down to the workstation level. And I watched people when you were talking about virtualization because you lost me. And I turned around and I started looking at other people. And boy, there's a lot of people. Several people came to me afterwards and said I didn't virtually understand what he was talking about. Between you guys here, you and Brent, and Jim has some background. Let's go back and take 20 minutes or so and do a what the heck is virtualization?
All right, happy to kind of jump into that. And, you know, that's one of those things that always bothers me when we take off on a topic like virtualization or a topic like metaverse, mm-hmm. because you have nothing to hang your knowledge on. And I always think that you've got to have hooks to hang your knowledge on, and if not, the knowledge will fall off. Right. Real quickly.
This is like trying to nail Jell-O to a tree.
It really is. Now, so what I hope we can do with our conversation over the next few minutes is at least get a few nails mm-hmm. out there, because I think this might be the critical software technology over the next 5 to 10 years. It's really that big of a deal in my line of reasoning. Mm-hmm. Dr. Bob Spencer from our group, now become pretty good friends since we met each other. He and I are kind of on the same line on this, and we started talking about virtualization in 1999, but we both came from IBM mainframe backgrounds, so we were doing virtualization back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So this is not new. This is really old type of concept, but the key here is pretty straightforward. What we're going to do is we're going to take a physical server, one or more, but let's keep it for just one for a moment.
And we're going to refer to that as a host system.
Host system, or, you know, a lot of times we're still using the word physical system because mm-hmm. there gets, but host system.
A box,
a computer. And in fact, we're going to get more specific about the computer. And then what we do is add a little piece of software. And if it's done right, the little piece of software that you add is actually called a hypervisor in today's terminology. And it's a very small operating system that understands how to talk to all that low-level hardware. And what it does is it exposes all the services like files and printers and networks to the software, the virtualization software. Well, now the virtualization software has nothing more to do than if it needs files or it needs printers, it talks to those, and you can have more than one of these files exposed, and you can actually create more than one of these logical servers. And what you actually do is you can create a virtual server by installing Windows, let's say, and installing Office and so forth. And you just install things and you create this image, if you will. It's a disk file. And you can copy that and put it to the side and it become your master image. And you can actually have a large number of these images available. But realistically, what we might do in the server environment is have an image that is maybe our engagement manager and an image that's maybe our tax product, and an image that maybe is our practice management product, and maybe an image that does wealth management. And we can isolate all of these different applications in their own little region. And if you think about that, that's what the publishers had asked us to do in the past. Put in a separate server for Exchange over here. Put in a separate server for CCH engagement, because we want to protect that, and it'll run better, and it'll be better for you.
So what we're really doing is fooling that box into thinking it's two boxes, or three or four or five, but the box thinks that it's two separate boxes, and the software that's running on, for example, box A, just knows that it's running, and what's going on in box B is invisible to it.
I'm not sure it's
the same as running on two boxes, right?
I was going to say, I'm not sure fooling is the right word, because really what we're doing is we're taking a set of hardware resources. And let's say we've got a server that's running at 10% of capacity. Now we add 7 software virtual images, if you will, to that one physical server. Now we've got 7 servers running at 10% of capacity, but using 70% of the hardware resources.
Right.
And so we're using our resources more efficiently. And the segregation that Randy's talking about, if one service goes down, the whole office isn't sitting around waiting for the services to come back.
Yeah. So it gets even better because several things are true about this. Number one, the server images actually become more reliable than when they're running on their own individual platform. That seems odd, but true. Mm-hmm. Number two, radically rapid deployment. Because today, if you set up a server and configure it and all that, you're doing well if you can get it done in a few hours or a day and a half. With a virtual machine, you can copy it as quick as you can copy a disk file and launch another server. So, you know, if you've got a standard image here and you just need to install an application, you copy it with a minute, minute and a half, launch it. You've now built your server. Mm-hmm. And so you start looking at it like that. The IT resources that you need to support your servers drops in a big way. And that's a really good thing as far as I'm concerned, because we've got IT people doing a lot of low-value things, and I'd rather have them doing higher-valued things. So that's a real clear difference. And then it goes even more fun. The ratio right now is 10 or 12 virtual images can run on a single server. So use the example of 7 or 8, which is perfect. Mm-hmm. But I've got clients that are running 20 servers in one box. Now, you might say, hey, look, I'm a CPA firm. I only have two or three servers, and you probably do. You probably have a file server, and you have an Exchange server, and you might have a SQL server for your practice management or something else. Maybe you've only got three. But what we can do now, instead of having three, is we can only have two. And we can actually put two physical servers or two hosts here, and now we can launch as many of these virtual servers on top of it as we want. And in real time, we can move a virtual session from one server to another for load balancing purposes, perhaps, or for business continuity disaster recovery, perhaps, or for performance, perhaps, but it actually can be all automatically managed. So you're a two-location CPA firm. Set up a virtual server farm in location A and location B. Let everybody run as if they had their own servers, because most of us have centralized to Citrix or Terminal Server because it was too much pain to manage those edge servers. It's no pain at all now. And in fact, over WAN lines, I've got clients in New Jersey and Tennessee that basically are moving these things over WAN lines in real time.
Sure.
Okay. And it's like, this is pretty magic. Right. Now, we're talking about it from a server perspective, and we're going to go talk about it from a desktop perspective in a minute.
That's the thing that's happening now.
Oh.
And you're seeing this in, you know, in PC magazines and things, and I see people. In fact, I considered very strongly when I bought this new laptop. I considered very strongly going over and buying a Mac, because the Macs are now Intel based, and I can run Parallels over there and run Windows along with my. I decided not to do that, but people are doing that, and they're running like Vista and XP on the same machine. How do you do that?
Well, in fact, if I could just pick up, because we had an attendee here at Tech that walked up at the end of the session. He says, I'm running Parallels. He says, what a great experience. He says, I was a Windows user before. Now I got my Mac. I got all the parallel, virtual operating systems running. He said, every one of my CPA firm applications runs properly. Wow. And he says, It was the best business decision I ever made. And you might recall we mentioned that in Tech Update yesterday,
right. Yep.
Because we got the vision here. We can run on Linux. And, in fact, our opening keynote this morning, the Adobe guy, he's the guy that created the current version of the Macintosh operating system. That is the guy who was responsible for it. Okay? So that's why I know him. Been around a long time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Smart guy. So, you know, you're looking at this now and saying, whoa, this is really cool. But now we can keep talking about the performance is faster, because on that same machine where we were doing 10% utilization, we're now getting 70 or 80 and more. And here's another new feature, and this is hard to conceive, but you can actually virtualize a desktop now with VMware. And what you can do is you can build the equivalent of your desktop PC, but only run it on the virtual machine. So all I have to do is just have a communication to the server, and now I've got my virtual desktop wherever I want to work, which means now inside the whole firm, everything can just be deployed once on the server, and everybody gets their image everywhere. You want to work from afar? Don't bother with terminal services. You don't need terminal services or Citrix anymore. That's another big step here. And, oh yeah, if I've got an auditor that needs to go to the field, just drop the virtual image on the laptop. And by the way, if you don't phone home occasionally, you can, by security, disconnect it. So the stolen laptop problem is no longer a problem, because that poor virtual session will never run again.
So, Brent, if if over on the workstation side, if there's somebody out there who's not an IT expert and doesn't have, you know, most of the firms, unfortunately, don't have, somebody who's a full-time IT guy. Randy and I have talked a lot about what we call hobbyist IT guys, of which I am one. We both kind of are. But if somebody's got, say, for example, a laptop, and they want to run Vista and XP, what do they do? How do they do that?
That's exactly what I've been doing. What I did, because I wanted to go to Vista early, but I knew through testing that a lot of the accounting applications wouldn't run under Vista, I loaded up an XP virtual machine on my Vista host machine, if you will, and now I have two machines running on the same one. Now, with multiple monitors, you can even have XP on one monitor and then save the other one for Vista, or if you've got three, you know, two for Vista and one for XP, or however you want to do that. And now all my accounting applications run in that XP virtual machine while I'm waiting for the application vendors to recraft their applications to run on Vista. And I kind of have the best of both worlds, if you want to think of it that way.
And you do that with Microsoft's Virtual PC?
I used Virtual PC 2007, which is a free download.
Free download. Mm-hmm.
Randy mentioned VMware, and they actually have some free products as well. On the Microsoft side, Virtual Server is also a free download. VMware VI3, which is their newest product, they were originally pricing that per processor, and I think they've backed off. I think they've changed their pricing now. It's not per processor. They're just selling licenses to
it. So, Jim, anything in your firm?
I tell you, awesome cost savings. We're actually looking into it. I mean, you're right, Randy. We have a server for everything. We got Citrix Farms going on. We got SQL servers. We got Exchange servers. We got servers throughout our entire firm. We have 8 offices throughout the state of New Jersey, and it's just amazing. The cost savings that firms and companies are going to have once they tap into virtualization is just amazing. The ratio of I don't know if it's going to necessarily affect the ratio of IT to FTEs, but I think it's, like you said, pushing those IT people that you have within your organization to do more of the high-level stuff, not doing a lot of the help desk, because, I mean, a lot of that stuff's going to go away using the virtualization. So real cost savings I see come down the
line. If you have a staff member, blow a machine, one reason or the other, as Randy said, go out and find that copy.
That's it.
And fire that thing up, and they're right back.
You're not spending all day trying to figure out what happened to a problem.
You don't troubleshoot. You just give them a new
image.
That's
a virtual machine. Yep. And just to help you as listeners get a sense for this, while the guys were talking, I'm running on Vista Enterprise on my laptop. I just started up a virtual machine of Office XP, and we're up and running, and the guys that are sitting around the table can see it looks like XP. So it's exactly what you're describing there, Brent. Yeah. And it's the only way we can solve the incompatibility problem, which will persist for at least a year based on the way things are unfolding right now. So if you're going to buy new machines and you either accidentally or on purpose choose Vista, then you can use Virtual PC. Remember, free is a good word here in this case. And the Virtual PC 2007 from Microsoft is a great tool, which I would recommend on these desktops. Very easy to load. One of the biggest issues we're having with the Virtual PCs on the desktop, though, is that the images created through Virtual PC 2007 are larger than a DVD in many cases. Right. So moving the images is a problem, whereas the VMware desktop makes a much smaller thing that still fits on a DVD. But, no big deal. We're getting Blu-rays and HDs. It'll all fit on there. So it's okay.
Well, not only that, but as Greg mentioned, I ran my XP virtual machine actually across the wire. So I put the virtual machine on a network drive. I'm not going to get as good a performance as if I run it on my local drive, but it was satisfactory to me. I wanted to mention one other application that we had with a client just this last week. This is a healthcare client. They had two very specific applications. One needed a special configuration of the network card. It needed a special gateway that conflicted with the other application. So the way we solved that is we actually have the host system running XP, and we added a virtual XP machine. So they're running two XP machines on the same piece of hardware, one configured with the required gateway for the specialized application. And now it's a window, if you will, within the machine, and that user doesn't have the conflicts. She was actually going to another machine, to run that specialized application, they needed the gateway.
Wonderful deal. In fact, I would suggest I have a client in Arizona that we went out to look at, and they had a very old version of accounting software. And they couldn't upgrade their hardwares because everything was configured for this very old version of accounting software they wanted off of. But, you know, their computers were starting to break. And I said, you know, did you consider virtualizing this desktop? And they kind of looked at me, having, like most people, not heard of it. And I said, look, there's a utility that will do a physical to virtual conversion. All you do is point it to this machine and say, make it a virtual, and it takes all the settings of a desktop or all the settings of a server and copies it up to a virtual machine. So they said, okay, that's all I have to do, just point and say go, sucks it all out. So now they got a virtual machine. They logged in and said, it's exactly perfect. So now they were released from the tyranny of having the old machines, the slow, the failures. Just put in a new machine, launch a virtual, they're happy.
So let me. We're getting toward the end here. We're going to have to wrap up. But I want to think about this as a vision thing. We see where we're at. We've done this virtualization, started at the server side, and now it's trickling down to machines. So I see we're gonna end up with desktops and laptops with a couple of virtual machines. Makes it real easy to grab them from the network, and you can, there's all sorts of benefits there. Then there's another thing coming down the line. We'll have to talk about it another time, but there's a concept. Microsoft bought a company called Softricity, which kind of takes, it's another step. It's not virtual machines, it's not Citrix, but it allows an application, a full application, to act as though it were installed on your machine when it's not, and come down the wire, you know, so there's that thing, and then the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is really what? Software as a service, right? Mm-hmm. So do you see those things as kind of stepping stones?
You bet. Absolutely.
Yeah, they all play together in such a way. And frankly, this disconnection between servers and desktops, or browsers and servers, or fat applications, and it's all breaking down right now in front of our eyes, which is a great thing to be watching.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And you need to be aware of it. And, you know, another virtualization piece that we'll need to talk about in the future is virtual appliances. And the idea here is that you no longer need an operating system for these virtual machines, because you can actually just load the application only. And instead of having to load Windows or Office or these other things, the virtual machine appliances can actually talk through a tiny piece of software to the virtual operating system.
Have only what it needs.
Only what it needs, meaning less complication, faster, smaller, more stable, easier to support. There's a whole litany.
And easier to update, because there's only one of them.
And you should know that all of the publishers that we would typically think about understand this. And it's a very exciting thing. And I'm looking at it saying, installation of software. No longer needed.
Gonna go away.
You know what was dragging this down over the years was the hardware manufacturers, and maybe for obvious reasons, because they could see virtualization taking away the need to buy more hardware.
Sure.
But now they've embraced it. They're supporting it. The new hardware components that are coming out actually are built for virtualization.
And that's part of the reason, you know, Intel's not only done that, but that's part of the reason I'm really thinking this through on the rack servers versus the enclosure blade servers, because you will see from vendors this year tiny enclosures that are appropriate for a 10-person CPA firm, in my opinion, meaning we can use nothing but pluggable blades in a CPA firm.
Right.
That's pretty exciting stuff.
No more computer rooms. This is now a computer drawer, or just a...
Yeah, it'll be smaller than a file cabinet drawer and have everything to support, let's keep it small, a CPA firm of 100.
Yeah, well, 90% of the firms in America have 10 or fewer people, and that's, I mean, where we're getting to is the forgetting completely about where stuff is, stuff being data and applications. You forget completely where it is, just as though when we walked in this room, we turned the lights on, and none of us had to worry about where the power came from. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter, and I still don't know if it's hydro or coal or where it came from, and it doesn't matter.
Or how it gets here. Or how it gets here from where it was generated.
Exactly. Who cares? It all works. So, well, this has been virtually a really great time, but it wasn't virtual. It was physical. We're all here. I want to thank all the regular panelists. Jim, thanks so much for joining us. It was
great
having you.
Happy to be here.
Great.
And, always good to have a guest.
Here you go.
Right. Super. And Brent, thanks for taking the time. I know you're really busy here.
Good to be here.
And,
thank you.
Reverend Johnson, I know your schedule has got to be absolutely scary here. You're doing all those presentations. And I want to specifically thank the AICPA media team who provided and allowed us to use their room. They were very, very gracious. Got great equipment. You'll probably notice that our sound quality is much better than it usually is when we do it over telephones and we get all that hiss in there. So I don't know if we're any brighter, but we'll probably sound better, and that's a good thing. And again, I want to thank ADP for keeping us alive and keeping our podcast on the air. It's great to be sponsored. Appreciate it. Randy, thanks so much. Brent?
Happy to be with you.
Okay. Yep, thanks.
Again, Tech2Go, episode 6, in the can. Bye.
That wraps up this edition of Tech2Go. Join the team around the table again next month for more technology advice and insight you can trust.
Tech2Go has been brought to you by the CPA Technology Advisor. Visit cpatechadvisor.com for more great podcast programs from the intersection of technology and public accounting.